Hey guys, it's Lauren.
And I'm Megan, and welcome back to the Scribe Squad Pod, a Fourth Wing book club.
Hi, welcome back everybody. This week we are starting with chapter 8 and Lauren reading our blurb.
Here we go. There's an art to poison not often discussed, and that is timing. Only a master can properly dose and administer for effective onset. One must take into account the mass of the individual as well as the method of delivery. And that comes from Effective Uses of Wild and Cultivated Herbs by Captain Lawrence Medina.
So when we left off, Violet had just gone out on a little nightly adventure. She was seeking something, so she climbed up into a tree. She found what she was looking for, and she said it would be useful. Mm-hmm. And ran into some rebellions, having a meeting. Ran into her boy Zayden, but really it. Never found out what she was really doing right. In that tree.
Exactly.
So that's where we left off.
Exactly. So it says that it starts out and it's super, super early in the morning. It's right before the sun even, or it's like just barely starting to rise. So it's super early in the morning. And she wakes up and her bunkmate's not there. She's by herself. And she says that, again, we see this throughout the book, but she says, the squad leaders talk a good game about enforcing curfew, but no one really cares except for Dane.
He is like the classic rule follower.
When I was
in college, my RA was the rule follower.
Oh no.
Yeah. And I was Greek and my big was also an RA, but was also a rule follower. So I had zero leniency on that. So I'm like, okay, L7 weenie, like, don't tell on people. We're adults here, everyone. Like, just let them be adults.
Exactly. Yeah. So she starts to leave, and she was like, oh, you know, seeing Dane is the best part of my day. It's just the best part of my day.
And he is very responsibly waiting for her outside of her dorm.
Ready? Reporting for duty.
Yes, waiting at, well, not her door, the barracks. But
yeah, the barracks.
Yeah, so she says he waits for her in the morning to escort her to her morning duty. And if you remember, she was volunteering for breakfast duty because she's an early riser. Mm-hmm. It's the only time he gets to see her when he's not her squad leader, because it's kind of this idea of like he's not really started his day, so he's just her friend.
Yeah. Just friends at this point. And he also is like, I don't know why you chose breakfast duty. It is too early in the morning. And she hits him back with, I have my reasons.
Dane asks if Violet's ready for today, since she is going to be starting sparring.
All the challenges start today.
Yes.
And she says, yeah, I'll be fine. Like, I've been practicing with Ree, and you don't have to worry about me. It'll be totally fine. Not a big deal.
And if you want to know a little bit more about how Violet's sparring journey went, we did just do a deep dive on it. And I think it's a really good, just to know that beginning chunk, if you want that background information, great listen. It doesn't actually give a lot of spoilers into the future. So I think it's a pretty safe one to listen to if you just want some extra information.
I agree. So Violet says, she's like thinking, she says she knows that Oren Seifert will be her first fight. She said, you know, remember Brennan's book said, if you know where to look, you'll know who you're going to be challenging that week. So she said his name was posted next to hers, right where Brennan said it would be. She said Oren is a tall blonde first year with tolerable knife skills, and he packs a good punch. Mm. So she's doing a little bit of research about him too.
Yes. And you'll find out like who he kind of hangs out with and listens to. But yeah, so Dane, you know, he's letting her know, like, hey, I'll worry about you.
Right.
Which is understandable. They're pretty good buddies. He's waking up early.
Exactly. He doesn't want her to get hurt again. Like,
and I do genuinely think that it breaks his heart to see her in any kind of pain. He does not want to see that.
Exactly.
So Violet tells him, quit worrying.
Leave me alone.
First off, I've got this. But he can't save her. And that's, I think, the reality that she's accepted is this is inevitable. What I'm doing in it is inevitable. What I'm going to face is inevitable. Your care and your worry is not going to change this.
Exactly. So quit doing it.
And again, really stark contrast to Zayden last night saying, or last night in the book, saying, hey, go harder at Jack. Just go at it. Keep going, move forward. Where Dane's like, no, step
back. Like, stay away from him. Yes. Don't confront him. Don't do anything.
And that's what he's like told her. He's like, I can't protect you from these things.
Right.
She's not looking for protection.
Exactly.
But yeah, he can't. He's worried about the gauntlet, threshing, Jack. He's worried about all of that for her.
Exactly.
Which I do, again, think that speaks to how much he really cares
about. I do think that it comes from a place of like genuineness. Almost to a fault, though.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I really do think he genuinely wants the best and cares for Violet, but she's like starting to get a little annoyed because
yeah.
There's nothing that can be done.
Well, I think it's one of those things that's like, it's telling her that he doesn't think she's capable.
Right.
Whether or not he's saying that, that's how she's receiving it. And honestly, I think that that is determined by your background. Like
yeah.
For me, that's how I'm also receiving it for Violet mm-hmm. on her behalf. But I think I've had people underestimate me.
And I also think too, after having the conversation with Zayden, she is also... her mind was already made up that she's going to be here and he needs to like quit babying her essentially. But the fact that Zayden told her to just stand up to him, it's almost reiterating that for her. Like, you're right. Like, I don't need to have people think that I'm weak. So how can I make myself seem strong? And Zayden's kind of helping her in that sense.
So Dane tells her to stay away from Jack, mm-hmm. something we've kind of known, and not to give him an excuse to come after her. Very, again, stark contrast to what Zayden said to her last night, which was like, throw knife sets in.
Like, freaking scare him, dude.
Yeah, just like, let him know that you're not an intimidated, little, broken, feeble person.
Right, exactly. And Dane, you know, reiterating how, like, dangerous Jack is. He says Jack is already responsible for too many names on the death roll. And Violet here talks and she's like, well, I guess that means that all the dragons are going to love him because they love like ruthless people mm-hmm. like that.
Yes. So he tells her once again, hey, well, it's not too late to join the scribes, which would be obviously the best quadrant to go to, but that's not where Violet wants.
Exactly.
Violet wants to go to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Violet and Violence are just getting caught in my mouth. Again, don't ever trust me to pronounce a name correctly.
Here we are.
Lauren. Just kidding. So, yeah. So she shuts it down. She's like, hey, I will see you later.
Yeah. So she makes her way down to her breakfast duty. And she says she's got a little pocket she pockets a vial of dried powdered Bonnelly berries. On her way in, she takes her place at the serving line and she does a little tap, tap, tap.
Sprinkle.
A little sprinkle.
Chef's kiss makes it a little better for her.
She puts that in Oren's scrambled eggs.
So now she is in dragon class.
Yes. So that's all happened at breakfast and now she's in class.
So Kaori starts with, keep the temperament of each specific breed in mind when you decide which dragon to approach and which to run from at threshing. So they're about to go through different dragon types, mm-hmm. how they approach them. Kaori is the dragon teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, not just creatures, he's specific to dragon.
Right.
And you'll find out he referenced his signet. His signet is very important, and they thought it was more important to show and stay at Basgaya than it was to be on the battlefield.
Exactly.
And so he basically becomes a projector.
Mm-hmm.
He can project what he, you know, in front of the students. And so he's not only describing these dragons to them, he's showing them, and they get to see it. And it's kind of interesting because we'll reference as we go through, like, it changes in size. So, like when it shifts over to a different dragon, she was like, it actually looked she was looking up to it.
Yeah.
So it almost seems to be a little bit to scale. I just think it's an interesting signet. Again, not a common signet,
right?
Because we know that the wielding of like water and fire, those are our common ones. This one is not.
Exactly. So so they start with red scorpion tails. That's the first dragon that he projects and shows everybody. He tells them that the red scorpion tails are the quickest to temper, and if you offend them, you're gonna die. He says they prefer that you approach them from the left and the front if possible. And somebody is like, throughout this whole like little section, all the kids are like, he's like, and what do you do if a dragon does this? And they're all like, run.
Yeah.
Run the other way. You're gonna die. You're gonna die.
I do want to point out, red dragon is what Dane has, right?
Dane.
He has a red dragon.
Yes, he does. Kath.
So he lets them know that there are 100 dragons this year, but some might change their minds during the presentation in 2 months, depending on what they see. And this is when you find out before threshing, mm-hmm. that they parade them in front of the dragons, and the dragons decide if they want to continue throughout their match. If like they kind of see the person they think they want to match.
Right.
And Violet notes that there are 37 fewer dragons than last year.
And if we remember, going back to a couple of earlier chapters, if you don't bond with a dragon, you have to repeat your first year. So this is why it's so important and why some of these kids are so ruthless and killing people, because there's only so many dragons that are going to bond. And just because, even if there were enough dragons, doesn't mean that they are willing to bond anyone. They have to want you. So that's why the numbers matter.
And that's why sometimes, and again, we're referenced that the dragons love brutality. So again, like, it doesn't matter that Jack has killed so many people, because a dragon's going to want that in his personality.
Exactly.
So also when she's like, hey, that's 37 less than last year, I think Yori ends up saying, or someone ends up saying, yeah, and 21 less than the year before that, or 20-something before that. So each year they've seen a steady decline of dragons that want riders.
Right, exactly. And they don't know why either. And they mentioned that in this chapter, that he's like, I don't know why it's happening this way. It just is happening this way. But she notes too that there are fewer and fewer dragons every year. However, the number of riders coming into the quadrant every year is staying steady. So people are not coming here, but less dragons are wanting to bond. So the numbers don't add up.
She also kind of takes a step back and she's like, interesting, like, I'm gonna big picture. Mm-hmm. Hey, the eastern borders, the attacks of the eastern borders are increasing, mm-hmm. and the wards keep getting affected. So she just she's like kind of putting this all together, and someone asks the number of dragons willing to bond impacts the wards.
Right. And Kaor basically tells him he doesn't know. He doesn't know if they do. He says the number of bonded dragons has never affected the wards before, but it is curious that now they're seeing increased breaches.
And he can't really lie to them because they're in battle brief.
Exactly.
And he's like being transparent about it. He's like, we don't know.
We don't know.
It's kind of just magic.
It's
just magic, you know? It's just the dragon magic. I'm sorry, we're weird. So the dragon that he's displaying next is a navy blue dragon. Mm-hmm. Kaori says, don't worry. You don't even have to worry about approaching this type of dragon, but you need to know about this dragon because someone here has this. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Someone here has this dragon, and it's Sigale.
Yeah.
And we find out that Sigale is Zayden's dragon. But mm-hmm. That's how what he says, hey, you should know and recognize Sigale because you're going to see her. Mm-hmm. And there are a handful of other blue dragons, but they need to be able to recognize them.
Yes. They're mostly all in active service, those other dragons. And then he starts specifically talking about Sigale and not just blue dragons. He says that she's, again, a blue dragon tail, and she is the rarest. So not only can they be a certain color, but their tails can be different.
Yes.
You have like the dagger tail, which just like you think, there's a dagger at the end of their tail. There's a morning star tail and a club tail. We'll learn a little bit about those here in a minute. But so she's the rarest. She's a dagger tail. She's extremely ruthless, and he says that she does not abide by what they assume to be what the dragons consider law, because she is bonded with the relative of one of her previous riders. It's typically forbidden, but Sigale does what Sigale does, and nobody questions her.
So that is the first time you realize that Zayden he's riding a relative's dragon.
Exactly.
And I think that's a little, I thought that was so cool the first time I read it. I was like, it's kind of nice.
Like keeping it in the family.
Like, you know? The only thing I compared it to is actually one of my business partner, his son served on the same ship that his grandfather served on. And
So cool.
And I was like, it probably feels very rewarding mm-hmm. to Zayden to have this family connection, especially when he doesn't have family around.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So Sigale, most powerful of all the blue. Mm-hmm. Violet mentions, no wonder Zayden's signet is so powerful. Like, no
exactly.
wonder he can wield shadows, because this dragon is incredibly powerful.
Exactly. Exactly.
So then
they talk about black dragons.
Ooh, this, the, like, on the tier of dragons and their fierceness, Black is
the elite.
Number one.
Yeah.
Like, that is it. There is only one dragon actively out, and it is the common
Melgren's. General Melgren's dragon. And they say there's only two black dragons left. One of them is General Melgren's, and it's the largest dragon out there right now. The largest and the most powerful, and it's General Melgren's. And the only other one, Carrie tells him, don't even worry about this. I'm going to show... Somebody asks, can we see a black dragon? And Carrie doesn't want to show them because... You're not going to see one.
Yeah.
Unless you run into Melgren's, but you're not going to run into Melgren's. And so he ends up showing them, and he says the only other black dragon hasn't been seen in 5 years. So the picture that he has of this dragon is probably not even accurate because it's been so long since anybody's seen him. And it's like a middle-aged dragon. He's got to be like around 100 years old. But basically, don't worry about him because he's not going to be here this year.
He also lets them know that there hasn't been a black dragon born in a century. Mm-hmm. So not only are there not ones out and active, there's not ones actively being born that they are aware of.
Correct.
And so these black dragons are the smartest, they're the most discerning, and the rarest. So they, you know, they're just cunning. Like, they can't be outsmarted. They are the top-notch dragons.
Yep. And wouldn't you know who wants to have one of these?
Oh, me. I'm ruthless. I'll kill anyone. I'll throw people off the parapet. I need a black dragon. This is... You know what he is? Daddy, I want to go to Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
He's like, this dragon is mine. He's not really that exact.
That's really funny, though.
Yes. We just like to poke at Jack.
Jack, he's too much for me.
It's probably because he would have murdered us, okay?
Right. Actually, our little scribe selves.
We can talk a lot about it behind this podcast. Jack is like, yes, I want it. Kiori says, oh, it's not even going to matter.
Right. And he says that this dragon hasn't agreed to bond since his previous and only other rider was killed during the uprising. He says that his previous rider was Naolin, and somebody asks about Naolin and what his signet was, because again, the more powerful your dragon is, the more powerful your signet can be. So somebody asks, well, what was Naolin's signet?
And it gets kind of uncomfortable, to be honest with you. You know, Kaori starts looking at Violet. You can already tell this is going to be important information, but also that they're, because it's involving Violet, you kind of start to get this feeling that Violet knows more. Mm-hmm. Also, the dragon tail that's not bonded has a morning star tail.
Oh, yes.
And that is the top of the top. So not only is it the top dragon, it's got the top tail. So this one's even over Melgren's. Mm-hmm. So this is like the fiercest dragon that there is.
Yes.
So the previous rider was Naolin. Mm-hmm. And this, it comes to light that Naolin could siphon. Mm-hmm. So he could take other people's segments and he could siphon them. And he could absorb power from various sources, other dragons, riders, and then redistribute it.
Right. So somebody, from there starts asking, what's going on with Naolin? So somebody asked how he died. And Kiori says he attempted to use that power to revive a fallen rider, but it didn't work because there's no signet capable of resurrection, and he was depleted in the process. He said that he burned out and died next to the other rider that he was trying to save.
He also takes a moment to say that they will become familiar with the term burnout, mm-hmm. which makes you believe that there are people who just happen to do, they think they're more powerful than they are. Mm-hmm. And they literally burn their bodies out from trying to channel their signets.
Yeah. I mean, power at the end of the day is like, some people get greedy with power, especially some of these people who have very distinct signets and very strong signets. Like, your body can only handle so much at the end of the day.
So immediately Violet feels strange. Mm-hmm. And it's because Naolin was...
he was trying to save Brennan.
Mention that in this chapter, don't they?
Yeah, yes. Stay after class, and she's like, was it Brennan? Because I don't think she had ever been told the full story of what happened or what was going on. So I think this is her first, realization, and she's finally heard the story of how it happened. So it takes her back.
I guess I didn't really ever piece it together that their parents probably didn't tell everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Kaori tells her, it was Brennan.
And so Violet immediately says, well, if he knew that he couldn't resurrect somebody, why was he trying to resurrect Brennan? Like, what was going on? And Kaori alludes to the fact that, you know, again, what we were saying, sometimes people feel more powerful than they really are. But he also says, he says he's not sure, but bonding makes you a rider, but resurrecting someone makes you a god. And Malik probably doesn't like mortals treading on his territory.
And again, Malik is one of the gods and the god of death.
Of death.
Mm-hmm. So they, doesn't want him to be.
Exactly.
But then Kaori stops, you know, he's like, hey, by the way, let me talk to you for a second. And he's like, I've taught Brennan and Mira, and I'm a little sister, and Lauren's a little sister, and we all know this conversation when a teacher stops you and tells you that they taught my doctor sister and your lawyer brother that you're gonna get the I love teaching
them. I love
them.
They're so smart.
And they are the people. My sister,
yes.
Her brother. They are
genius.
But it's horrible when you're the younger sister getting compared. Just because you're your own person, and I know in my heart that that's what Violet
exactly.
was thinking. Because again, Brennan is everyone's favorite, and Mira is the most bad writer. Like, she is just a natural. But Kaori surprises her,
and he says, they're great, but you are smarter than both of them. And not just smarter, but he's like, I've seen you helping your friends, so it seems like you're a lot more compassionate than them too. And that Violet is taken aback, and she says it's not often that she gets compared to her siblings and comes out on top. And again, as little siblings, we can understand.
Yes, 100%. It's nothing anti the big siblings.
Right. They're great too.
We just understand. Yeah. And so he's like, being smart and compassionate is what's going to help you in brushing.
Exactly.
Like, he's basically the first person that's like, being the best doesn't mean being the most brute, being the one willing to take someone's life. These dragons are going to take, like, they want to see this.
Exactly.
And I think it's great that he, as the person who knows the dragon the best out of any other human, is giving her this comfort. And he's like, hey, they choose strength, but strength, you know, can be intelligent.
He says she was like, thanks, but being smart and compassionate isn't going to help her when it comes to threshing. And he says that dragons do choose strength and shrewdness, but not all strength is physical.
Yeah, so he's alluding to the fact that is...
Right, being smart and compassionate is also a great strength to have. So just because you're not like everybody else here doesn't mean you're not also as good as everybody else here.
Absolutely. So then we have another scenery change. So Chapter 8 has got quite a bit going on.
Yes.
So then we are at the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we kind of remember back right before she was in Kaori's class, well, Oren got a little extra treat from Violet. A little sprinkle of something. We don't really know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But she's nervous. Like, she's definitely nervous. Again, she kind of understands where she sits as far as her physical capabilities. And she kind of got to see what Oren's capable of.
Right, exactly.
So she's watching Rhee take down some other writer. And, like, she's like, that's so easy for Rhee. And she's
must be
like,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. She's like, this is what I'm so scared of. And her best friend's just like... Oh, we also forgot to mention at the beginning of this chapter, Rhee comes out of her. Rhee, Medain, and Violet are coming out together. She runs into Rhee coming out of
Tara.
I thought I was going to say Tessa, and I didn't know that was right. Tara's room, which one identifies for the first time that Rebecca Yaris is implying that Rhee. It has some open sexuality, which I think is amazing and incredible for representation.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shoves right back in Dane's face, because Dane's like, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. And she's like, we could be doing the same thing you two are doing. And she's like giving them eyes. But I think that's part of Rhee's character development is that you do get to see that she is just this open, loving. It doesn't really say she's only into women. It doesn't ever really bring that to it. And I like that, because it makes it a part... She's introduced about her romantic interest the same way that Violet was introduced with hers, which
exactly.
is just alluding to who she had a connection with.
And no, like, it's not like this big to-do. Like,
yes.
oh, that's, you know what I mean? Which I think it just makes it normal.
Yeah.
It's just so normal.
Dane was in shock she was with a woman.
No.
Dane was just shocked she was breaking a rule.
Exactly.
Like, Dane was like...
He's like, no rule breaking, okay?
Hey, what a world that they live in. That's what they're stressed out. Dane, not the rest of them.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
All right, so back to... Dane says, Orin's going to try to kill you,
yep.
which I think Dane thinks everyone's trying to kill
yeah.
him. But also everyone kind of is trying to kill him, so I don't know.
Seems like everybody's here to kill
Dane's
you.
Like, the eggs are trying to kill you.
Don't eat the eggs.
Yeah,
don't eat oranges.
He walks to the grass might be trying to kill you. No, he's not that extreme again. We're just being petty with Dane. So yeah, he's like, hey, she's going to try to kill you. I overheard him talking to his friends. Because of what Jack is saying to people, they think you're weak, and they think you're a weak member of your wing, and they're going to
yeah.
kill you because they think you're weak, and you're only as strong as your weakest person.
Exactly. Exactly.
But she says, I'm going to be fine.
I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
I know I'm going to be fine.
So about this time, Jack is here, and he starts taunting Violet, like making fun of her, calling her a cute little violet flower, and she's so fragile, and just like taunting her per usual.
Dude, that's basically the line.
Literally, Jack freaking Barlow.
I know. Again, not a girl's girl.
No. Oh, God.
So Violet, she starts unsheathing her both daggers, and she's like, gonna flick them in his direction.
So she does.
And then one nearly nicks his ear, and the other is just an inch beneath his balls. Jack is a little scared of this.
Jack's like, holy crap. And Violet is like, gives him a little smile, and she's very pleased, she says.
So if you take a step back, I don't know, I think that there were two people who gave her advice on this. I don't know. There was Dane, who was like, run away, be scared. And then there was Aiden, who was like, throw daggers at him.
Yeah, you're clearly good at that.
And I think it's, again, it's the secret acknowledgement of like, hey, actually, I can choose for myself. I have evaluated both of the situations.
Yeah.
And I want to throw knives at
I've come to a conclusion.
Yes. Which, honestly, I would be at that point now. So she throws it. Dane's reaction, I'm sure you know, so mad.
He is so irate with her.
He's like, lay low. Hey, don't bring attention to yourself. He's now even more angry. He's going to come at you harder. And like, she's like, that's not getting me anywhere.
Right.
He's still taunting me.
Right.
He still wants to kill me. And I like this kind of argument.
Same.
It's like, it's not going to change anything if I'm mean to him. He wants to murder me. Or he wants to murder me and I got to throw daggers at him.
Exactly.
So,
what could be the worst thing here?
Yeah. So I think this is,
I agree.
Classic Dane. And then we get that familiar prickle.
We get a little prickle in our scalp. Violet says that, yeah, she feels a prickle in her scalp and her heart flutters because she knows what that means. And typically that means that Zayden is around. So she looks around and she looks over at him and she says she swears there's a hint of a smile on his lips after watching what she did to Jack.
So Amaretto, which is I don't want to say coach because that's such an American way to put
yeah.
it, but the professor
yep.
is calls Violet and Orin's name and they start their first match.
Mm-hmm.
She's prepared as best as she can.
Yep, she's wrapped her ankles, wrapped all of her joints super well. She's like, all right, let's go.
So let's talk a little bit about Orin.
Yes.
So he's like, hey, like, don't take this personally, but I'm going to murder you.
I will absolutely be killing you.
Nothing personal, but I will personally be taking you out of this way. What? I mean,
out of this world.
I
here
mean,
we are.
I just don't think anything good comes after don't take this personally.
Same. Never. It never.
Yeah. So she's like, because she's a hazard to the world.
Yeah. And she says, well, I'm no more of a hazard than you are.
And he's like, my sister's a healer. And he said she heard about the bone snap.
Yeah.
So the getting mended or whatever isn't a secret, I think, as they thought
yeah.
might have occurred.
Right.
He's like, yeah, but they snap like twigs. And she's like, come find out.
Come find out.
I mean, come find out.
Come find out, little boy.
Before the sparring match, Violet noticed that Orin looked greenish.
Mm-hmm.
And that made Violet grin.
little thingy thing. And she said, right before they start their fight, he's looking very green. So something's wrong with him. She said, again, so they kind of start fighting. And she says, Oren charged at her, but he's being very, very sluggish. So not quite as quick as he has been. And then, so that's when Violet takes the opportunity and she dodges him and then throws a punch in his kidney.
And she starts taunting him.
Yes.
I mean, I'd imagine that you feel pretty high and mighty once you get that first punch.
Absolutely. Like, boom, boom, boom. Gotcha.
So he starts getting really sick and she used the opportunity to strike him, but she waits.
Mm-hmm. And then as she's waiting, he tries to charge her again, but Violet stays patient and waits until the perfect moment. And he pulls out a blade and she dodges his blade and then she immediately kicks him in the back. And Oren falls down. Violet gets on top of him, digging her knee into his spine and put her blade to his throat.
And she says, who needs strength when you have speed and steel? And what a nice little...
True.
Yeah. So he refuses to yield to her. And I think a big part of that is he pointed her out as the weakest member of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
And now he cannot take her down. So for him, there was no going to give in for that. I see where Oren is coming from.
Same.
At this moment.
Same.
But unfortunately for him, he just like continues to throw up. So Amaterio ends the match.
Yep.
And I think it's kind of interesting that the perception could be that he's so sick from what she's doing.
Yeah.
Or I think now that we understand that the little sprinkle in the eggs, the fact finding mission wasn't, you know, it was to collect things and to put into Violet's advantage.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So then she has her next match, and these are all weekly. So they have one challenge match a week. So the next week, she says that she gets, we don't get a name, but she gets paired with a stocky girl from Fourth Wing. And when they start the fight, she says that the girl can't concentrate long enough to throw a decent punch because Violet put a few mushrooms and their hallucinogenic properties in her lunch. And then throughout the fight, she says that the girl lands good kick, but at the end of the day, Violet ends up winning that one too.
Her fourth sparring match on the next week is a tall guy from Third Wing, again unnamed. His feet lose all feelings because Violet gives him a Zana root that causes this. She expresses that this time her timing was a little bit off, and she landed a few good punches to her face, but overall wasn't that bad.
Wasn't bad. Still won. Was a great fight. And then the next sparring match, another week goes by, and she fights a cadet whose vision turns blurry mid-match. This is because Violet put some Tarsila leaves into the girl's tea earlier. So she said this girl is really fast, and she tosses Violet into the mat and lands several kicks. But at the end of the day, Violet still wins.
So the sixth sparring match is the last challenge match. She earns her fifth dagger, takes the guy to the mat, because he is sluggish due to the bark of the carmine tree that she put into his water. And so by September, Violet's really proud of herself because she's defeated so many people. And she's also really proud of herself because she's killed zero of
exactly.
those people. And she is, I'd say, not, like, she's proud of both of those equally.
I agree.
She would not have wanted to win by
killing somebody.
Someone.
And again, this is all speaking to Violet, and you're learning more about, like, her character. Not just her actual character in the book, but her overall like personality and character of who she is to her core.
And she says, there have been 20 names added to the death toll, and I haven't contributed to that.
Not one.
And I mean, 20 names, that means 20 of their peers have continued. Yes, the sparring match, but also like...
But also, this is only 5 weeks, right? And there's one match a week, and 20 names... Each, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's a lot if you're only sparring once a week like this. And at least 20 people. That's crazy to me.
So she is now in, she's there to challenge again. She's still set in this. It's kind of gone through, and she's ready for her next match.
Mm-hmm.
But Amaterio. I'm ready for a drink, apparently. he steps up and he's like, hey, like, Rama has been taken to the healers because they can't walk.
Yeah, she can't walk at all. And Violet is kind of being like, oh, crap. That means that I gave her the walworm fruit too early. So again, timing is everything with these poisons.
So you know it, like, she's about to get repartnered and she's not going to have this intelligence advantage that she's been using.
Exactly.
But it should be fine because Ree's been teaching her how to spar and like she's
still been practicing.
Yeah. So like you're like, okay.
Like, it'll be fine.
It'll be good. And then they get a little volunteer. It's not as bad as it could be, because the worst, I think, would have been Jack.
Yeah, actually.
But it's Zayden.
It's Zayden. Zayden steps up to the plate and says that he is happy to step in and take Rayma's place for the challenge.
And that ends the chapter.
And that's where we're left off.
Yeah. So this week we'll continue on with, if you listened to last week's deep dive, you know it is our drunken book club. And so we decided to get together the members of the original book club that made us fall in love with Fourth Wing, have some adult beverages, and discuss some different theories. So we're going to continue on this week. And you guys can hear kind of what we're doing and what we're thinking and just see the girls who helped spark this love for us.
We love it so much. Catch you guys next time.
Don't forget to rate our podcast wherever you guys listen to your podcast. That helps us out a ton. Also, don't forget to follow us on all of our social medias. We are at Scribe Squad Pod across all boards. We like interacting with you guys there.
Absolutely.
Also, if you guys have any questions, suggestions, comments, anything like that, please feel free to email us. Our email address is scribesquadpod@gmail.com, and we hope to hear from you guys.